Now, Sandy.
And that time I didn't say anything, just went along like a good boy. My throat was as dry as an old chip. I looked at my watch and wasn't exactly surprised to see that over an hour had gone by. Well, that was all right. I was off duty. The day was murkier than ever, but the faint mutters of thunder had slid away south of us. "Those old days," someone said, sounding both sad and amused at the same time. "It's a trick only the Jews and the Irish seem to manage with any grace. We thought we'd strut forever, didn't we?" I glanced around and saw Huddy Royer, now dressed in civilian clothes, sitting on Ned's left. I don't know when he joined us. He had the same honest Farmer John face he'd worn through the world back in 79, but now there were lines bracketing the corners of his mouth. His hair was mostly gray, and it had gone out like the tide, revealing a long, bright expanse of brow. He was, I judged, about the same age Ennis Rafferty had been when Ennis pulled his Judge Crater Act. Huddy's retirement plans involved a Winnebago and visits to his children and grandchildren. He had them everywhere, so far as I could make out, including the province of Manitoba. If you asked, and even if you didn't, he'd show you a U.S. map with all his proposed routes of travel marked in red. "Yeah," I said. "I guess we did at that."
"When did you arrive, Huddy?"
"Oh, I was passing by and heard you talking about Mr. Dillon. He was a good old doggy, wasn't he? Remember how he'd roll over on his back if anyone said, 'You're under arrest?'"
"Yeah," I said, and we smiled at each other the way men do over love or history.
"What happened to him?" Ned asked.
"Punched his card," Huddy said. "Eddie Jackaboy and I buried him right over there."
He pointed towards the scrubby field that stretched up a hill north of the barracks.
"Must be 15 years ago, wouldn't you say, Sandy?"
I nodded. It was actually 14 years, almost to the day. "I guess he was old, huh?" Ned asked.
"Phil Candleton said, 'Getting up there, yes, but—'"
"He was poisoned," Huddy said in a rough, outraged voice, and then said no more.
"If you want to hear the rest of the story," I began.
"I do," Ned replied at once.
"Then I'll need to wet my whistle."
I started to get up just as Shirley came out with a tray in her hands. On it was a plate of thick sandwiches, ham and cheese, roast beef, chicken, and a big pitcher of Red Zinger iced tea.
"Sit back down, Sandy," she said. "I got you covered."
"What are you, a mind reader?" She smiled as she set the tray down on the bench. "Nope. I just know that men get thirsty when they talk, and that men are always hungry. Even the ladies get hungry and thirsty from time to time, believe it or not. Eat up, you guys, and I expect you to put away at least two of these sandwiches yourself, Ned Wilcox. You're too damn thin." Looking at the loaded tray made me think of B.B. Roth talking with Tony and Edis while his crew, his children, not much older than Ned was now, drank iced tea and gobbled sandwiches made in the same kitchenette. Nothing different except the color of the tiles on the floor and the microwave oven. Time is also held together by chains, I think.
"Yes, ma'am. Okay."
He gave her a smile, but I thought it was dutiful rather than spontaneous. He kept looking over at Shed B. He was under the spell of the thing now, as so many men had been over the years, not to mention one good dog. And as I drank my first glass of iced tea, cold and good going down my parched throat, loaded with real sugar rather than that unsatisfying artificial shit, I had time to wonder if I was doing Ned Wilcox any favors, or if he'd even believe the rest of it. He might just get up and walk away all stiff-shouldered and angry, believing I'd been making a game of him and his grief. It wasn't impossible.